sit alone. We do not stand alone. We do not walk alone. We do not dance alone. Is with us there, Emmanuel, Emmanuel, our God is with us there. We do not work alone, we do not cook alone, we do not drive alone. Present tense. This is Jesus, Word made flesh. This is Jesus. We do not eat alone. We do not sleep alone. We do not live alone. We will not die alone. Unknown, unleashed. Emmanuel, Emmanuel, our God is with us there. Emmanuel, Emmanuel, our God is with us.
Hi, good morning and welcome to Great Shelford Free Church. We're doing things a little bit differently this week as we're not live. This is pre-recorded, but we are watching it live. You're watching it live, broadcasted over Facebook. This means that part of our service towards the end, we would normally pull everyone's prayer requests together. So I'm not going to be able to do that this week. But please do put your prayer requests in the comments, and then others and other people who are watching at the same time can take those and take them away. So let's continue to use the comments section for our prayers. It also means that this week we're not doing Zoom coffee and chat. We're having 1 week off. We'll be back as normal on the 6th, but this week we're not doing it after our service. We still have children's resources on our website, and please do download them and get your kids colouring in as the service goes along this morning. Well, as it's bank holiday weekend, we're doing things a little bit differently. So this week, we're going to focus on our BMS partner missionaries. That's Alan and Megan Barker, who have lived in Nepal for over 20 years now. And we're going to watch this first welcome video where we get a little tour of their apartment in Nepal. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to our house. We can't be with you in the UK at the moment, because obviously everyone's stuck. But we thought we'd show you a little bit around our house and the surroundings. We're actually out on our balcony, the back balcony at the moment, where we sometimes sit and have coffee and watch the world go by. As you can see from the surroundings, we have maize fields, we have banana trees, we have goats and chickens and buffalo. So although we're in the middle of the city, it still feels very much like the countryside. Let's go indoors now.
So, welcome to our kitchen. Here's our water filter so that we don't get sick from the tap water. And this is, of course, where a lot of action happens, like most families. Back in the UK, we spend a lot of time in our kitchen. We have a nice cooker, fridge, general normal things like you have at home. This is where we sit to have our dinner most evenings. And through here, you can see where we sit to watch our television. But main reason we've brought you here is to show you this is where Alan spends a lot of his time at the moment, given that he can't go to work on his dependent visa. This is his office, where he does what he can to support his friends. As for me, I'm going to the hospital most days these days. Occasionally I have a working from home day, and for the first 3 weeks of lockdown I was confined to my office, which is this little corner here.
And this is the way we come in and out of the house. We actually live on the first floor. If you look down there, you can see the steps. And then over here is the way in. We don't actually live on a road. We, as you can see, we live on a very rough path that leads to the house and the gate and our yard. But this is the view from the back balcony. We'd love to welcome you here anytime you're passing.
Well, that's been great to have a little tour of their apartments. We're going to hear a little bit more from Megan as she brings us a reflection later on. But earlier, last week, Diana and myself sat down and had a conversation about the theme of wide doors and deep wells. And we're going to watch that conversation now. Well, welcome. I thought I'd just take this opportunity, and me and Diana have done some little interviews over the last couple of weeks, but I thought we'd just have a bit of a chat around a phrase that's been spoken of a little bit over the last few weeks, and that's deep wells and wide doors. And I think when it came up at leadership, because it came from a leadership conversation, I can't remember quite where it came from or who it came from, but it came from somebody. But I think when I heard it and when you heard it, it resonated a little bit with our journey to this point, but also kind of resonated a little bit with where we might be going. So generally, how, when you heard it, what was your reflections?
Okay, so it was, we'd been looking at some papers of what other churches were doing and how churches were able to function during lockdown and looking beyond that. And it seemed as if what they were doing was divided into two type of areas. And one area was about deepening the faith of the congregation and those who came to church. And the other one was about having things that were looking outwards and what programs they were doing. And it just seemed to be such a good way of thinking about how we move forward. It's things that are for us within the fellowship, about taking us deeper in our relationship with God, and how that then affects what we do and how we share that with other people outside.
And I think it also spoke because it's a bit of our journey over the last few years, hasn't it? I mean,
yes.
Your role's changed over the last year or two to be more outward looking. And certainly over the, since I got back from my sabbatical, I've continued to wrestle with and work through a kind of a deep spiritual faith personally, but also, I guess, for the whole church. So I think it kind of spoke into a journey that we'd already been on a little bit, as well as where we might be going in the future. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why the phrase stuck with me. So when we think, I guess when you hear this phrase, you'll think, well, what are you talking about? You know, do we need to get some bigger doors in the building? I don't think we mean physical doors, although there are physical barriers for people to come in this building. Yeah. So if we start with wide doors, what do we mean by that?
Well, I think when we think about wide doors, we think, why do we need to have wide doors? And for many years, we've talked about church without walls. That was a common phrase that people would bandy about, really. And what does it mean to be a church without walls? And I think that sort of links in with this wide doors. It's about how do we make ourselves to be really welcoming to people. But one of the things that has really struck me about wide doors is, do we want the doors to be wide because it's about getting people in, which I think is a historic way of looking at having doors on the church. It's all about getting people in. But we also need wide doors because we need to be going out into the community. And I really see that as a two-way thing, about reaching out to those who are not part of this congregation.
And I guess traditionally there's been barriers for people to engage in the faith, and that's kind of always been the case, isn't it? You know, not everyone will engage with who Jesus is or what we're talking about, and we've tried lots of things over the years, and churches have tried loads of ways of engaging with the community. But you're right, a lot of it, although I think even when you first started, you were trying to encourage us not to think about success being people in the building and our relationship with actually the wider community. And actually, it's a lot of the foundation to running the coffee shop wasn't about getting people in to the building. It was about loving our community and being generous with our community. So I guess in that sense, what does the new normal, which people talk about, look like when we're talking about wide doors? What does that look like practically?
Well, I think it's about how we engage with the community, what things that we do with them to share the love of Jesus. How do we do that? How do we manage that? How do we encourage people from our church, people of faith, to engage with those who are outside, who perhaps are on the fringes or who have some faith or who have no faith? How do we make that sense of the love of Jesus available to those who don't know him or only know of him? And with the current climate, with COVID, those ways of engaging have become less, I think. But we need to be taking the opportunities that we have.
And I think also resonates with less of a corporate response and more of an individual. How do we personally live lives that demonstrate God's love in the community? Because I think there's when the brand of Great Shelford Free Church rocks up to do something, that can connect with some people, but not. But I think when our personal relationships connect with people, I think that says a very different thing, or a deeper thing, maybe.
And I think that's much more where we're moving to, because I think that in the past, when we would consider reaching out into the community, it would be a church-focused thing. We're having an event, we're doing something where either we invite people in or we do something outside, and it's a lot of people from church who will be there and participating. But now we're looking much more at, what can I do as an individual? What can you do as an individual? How can you share the love of Jesus with those around you? How can you demonstrate who he is and how much he loves them? And that can be on a daily basis. It's on your front line, wherever that might be. It's when you go to the shop. It's when you walk in the street. It's whatever the things you are involved with on a daily basis, it's how can you be Jesus there? How can you share his love with those around you? And recognizing that nobody is excluded. I think when we think about wide doors and we want people to come in, sometimes what we think about is wanting people to come in who are like us, but recognizing that those people out there are not all like us, and yet they are loved in the same way, and we need to love them too.
I guess then moving on to deep wells, because I think that both of them resonated with both of us, but I think if we think about where our energies lie in church life, I think a lot of over the last few years you're building more towards this looking out into the community, and certainly over the last few years I've been thinking a little bit more about how do we grow deeper in our faith, and I think that's probably why the deep wells reflected or sort of impacted me. And I think when I started thinking about it, it was where does our journey with God get its strength from and get its spirit and energy from? And it's not from a following maybe our expectations or what we think we should do or what historically Christians have done, but it comes from actually a depth of knowing and understanding who God is. But that's not always a straightforward thing, because it comes with a lot of baggage sometimes about how, whether I'm good enough or whether I'm doing enough stuff. But yeah, that becomes quite a difficult challenge.
Yeah, and I think that if you haven't got that that certainty, that surety of your own faith and having those roots deep yourself, that's when you become less confident in sharing that faith with other people. So it's really important that people feel secure in their faith and they feel deeply rooted in their faith. And so you need to have that to be able to reach out more. And the deeper you go, the more you want to reach out, I think.
Yeah, and I think although it does come up against challenges about how we understand faith and what expectations are, you know, regarding that. And I think one, so we talked a little bit about this before lockdown, but there's a diagram we have with a kind of a journey of our faith, and a kind of a pinch point is kind of you hit a wall, don't you? And the bit before that talks about kind of expectations, things we should do as Christians, and getting our identity from that. And then there's this kind of brick wall that we have to kind of work through. And the other side of that wall, there's the freedom of knowing that we're loved and cherished, and that our strength comes from God, not from what we do. And I think personally, the wall resonates with me over my last few years. I felt like my faith hit a wall of just understanding who God is. And I've probably spent the last few years just either clambering up that wall or falling off that wall or falling the other side of the wall.
Yeah.
Because it feels like a lot of my, I guess, early years understanding of what it means to be a Christian and early years understanding what it means to be a pastor and what it means to be in church ministry, a lot still was tied to identity and doing stuff.
Yeah.
And this wall of kind of wrestling with what our faith means. And I think that's been a huge challenge for me and continues to be a challenge as I kind of fumble around this wall. But I think what's exciting about wrestling with this is that we get some freedom from just the expectations maybe we had in the past. But it's not a comfortable place to be in. It's a really uncomfortable place often, because you've lost all that, well, if I just do the right thing, then God will love me. But yeah, so it's an interesting just to reflect on those. And I guess over the coming weeks and months, one of the things we want to work on is both of those aspects of church life, don't we? So we've been thinking about how we open the doors wider practically into our village, but also thinking practically how we encourage one another to dig deep into our faith, which is not, neither of them are simple.
Yeah, and it's about recognising that there's not a lot of tick boxes. I think sometimes we think there are tick boxes that I have to do these things, and when I've ticked all the boxes, I will have got that deep faith. But those boxes that we see as being a part of our journey or a necessary part of a journey, we have to be able to take those off and leave them aside and say, actually, this is about me and Jesus. This is about my relationship with him and how that impacts my life. And those other things, although they're good things, they're not what makes our relationship with Jesus better.
Yeah, and it becomes more complicated, doesn't it, in some ways? Because I guess the previous stuff, well, if I just do this, then God will love me. But actually, it's actually wrestling with it. Actually, I need to accept God loves me and live out of that depth. That then service and loving others and loving our community kind of grows from that. Rather than, I think, a lot of us just get worn out by expectation, you know, that God expects a lot from us. Well, it's been interesting just to have this chat. And over the coming months, I think we'll both kind of talk a little bit about these two aspects of church life. And they do kind of complement each other and sort of build on each other. But we're hoping as the whole church family that we can do this together. That as we think about what it means to have a bigger understanding of our community, of loving those around us, and also wrestling with this idea of what our faith is. So thank you for sharing with us, and we look forward to talking a little bit more in the future.
Yeah, it's really good to chat.
Well, interesting conversation. Oh, we can talk a lot, can't we, me and Diana, when we get going? But hopefully you found some of that helpful, and that conversation's going to keep going as we think about what church looks like in these coming months ahead. Now we're going to hear again from Megan this time, and she's going to share some reflections for us. So over to Megan.
Hello, everyone. We've been in Nepal now for 20 years. We came out in July 2000, and it's now July 2020. We've been reflecting quite a lot on service and how our life here has changed, and we've adjusted to different things. And Megan's going to now share a few thoughts for you about how our life has been here and some of the things that God's been teaching us over that time. I'm going to nip off and leave her alone and put the tea on.
So yeah, Alan's handed over to me because some of these thoughts were thoughts that I had when I was in Circuit on my own a few months ago, literally 2 weeks before this lockdown started. So we'd both been talking about 20 years and what have we learned in 20 years, and we made a PowerPoint that hopefully most of you have been able to see about a sort of reflection on life over 20 years. But then I was also pondering on what does service mean to us? And particularly kind of began by thinking about Nehemiah 8 verse 10, the joy of the Lord is your strength. And how does that fit in with a life of service? So let me go back 20 years ago when we first were planning to come out here to Nepal as a family. The verse that we shared at our valediction service, and then we've even got it on our wall in the kitchen, so we see it every day as we're eating dinner, is Joshua 24, verse 15, which says, "If serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourselves this day whom will you serve, whether the gods your ancestor served beyond the Euphrates or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me, Joshua, and my household, we will serve the Lord." So we chose to come here as a family and to serve the Lord here. And over the years, more and more, we've come to realise that we need to be careful to think about service is not results. Service is obedience. Here in INF, where we're seconded by BMS, in the organisation we work in, they use log frames. And in log frames, there's a lot about results in terms of you've got to reach these objectives, you've got to get these outcomes and outputs. And, you know, there's so many things we have to say. Have we met our targets? Have we met our targets? But we just want to encourage you that service is not about meeting targets. Service is about obedience. Just we need to do whatever God asks of us to do. And for us, that was coming out here and is being here. And just doing whatever God asks of us. And the results are up to Him, not up to us. We just do what we're asked to do and leave the rest in His hand. But then, as I say, I was particularly focusing while thinking about service on this verse, the joy of the Lord is your strength. This happens to be have been Alan's baptismal verse 40 years ago. And I was just thinking, you know, we can't serve if we've lost the joy of the Lord because we're weak. And so where does this strength come from? And it comes from joy. So what we need to be praying for is not the results, but the joy of the Lord. And it's interesting when we look at this verse in its context. If you read from verse 2 to about verse 12, you get pretty much the picture of the context. Here, Ezra has been reading the law out loud from daybreak to noon. All the people had been standing there that whole time, weeping as they listened. But what were they told to do at the end? Enjoy choice food and sweet drinks and share with those who do not have. Told not to grieve, for the joy of the Lord is your strength. And be still, for this is a sacred day. So thinking about that, you know, we think, what's a sacred day? A sacred day is when we go to church, maybe when we have a day at home reading the Bible and praying and spending time in, you know, deep meditation and being awfully spiritual. But actually, no, what was their sacred day? Choice food and sweet drinks. You know, sometimes God just wants us to enjoy the everyday things of life. And that reminded me of a verse that struck us probably 3 or 4 years into our time in Nepal when we were living in Kathmandu. We were very much thinking about Matthew 6, verse 33. Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. And we realised that for us that had been very true. But you have to open your eyes. You have to look at the everyday and see what is God doing? Because he does give us extra little blessings as we serve, as we obey, as we seek his kingdom and his righteousness. If we watch, we will see that he gives us things to encourage us, things to just keep us joyful along the way. And so I just want to share a couple of little examples from our family. First of all, our children had asked for many years to have a dog. Well, our last home in England was sheltered accommodation, and we lived in a little flat with pretty much no space outside. So where would we keep a dog? And all that, you know, we're wanting to go away and visit family, and how would that work with everything, the practicalities? So it never happened. But we come to Kathmandu and we had a beautiful black Labrador called Scouse, as it happens. You know, and I just feel like that was like God saying, thank you for coming to Nepal, thank you to the whole family, but particularly to the children for coming here, and here you are, have this beautiful black Labrador, pure Labrador. Another story how we came to have him. And then slightly comical example, you know, we were 39 when we came to Nepal, approaching midlife crisis. As a teenager, early 20s, you know, Alan had thought about having a trial bike. Now, we would never own a trial bike in the UK, but what did God give Alan when we got here? Couple were leaving, wanted to sell us their bike. So I got the little scooter, Alan got the trial bike. Thank you, Alan. Thank you for coming here. Have this trial bike, have fun. And so we could get out and about on these two bikes with as a family, but Alan got to have his trial bike. So keep your eyes open, see God is saying thank you. As you serve him, God will be giving you gifts along the way. But the other thing about joy that I was thinking about, and the fact that we get our strength from our joy in the Lord, is how can you be joyful when you don't have hope? So it's also very intrinsically linked with hope. And I just want to read a little quote from Tim of the Bible Project. We've been doing our daily Bible readings with the Bible Project this year. And he says, in the Bible, hope is about waiting, not for circumstances to change, but for God himself. God's character and his promises to rescue and restore our world are the only things that endure from generation to generation. And so the only option we're left with in times of uncertainty is to cultivate the difficult virtue of patient hope in God's promises. And how much do we need that right now? We couldn't be in much more uncertainty, could we? Then it reminded me of Romans 12. In verse 12 of Romans 12, it says, "Love must be sincere. Hate what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord." And the important bit, "Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. Share with the Lord's people who are in need. Practice hospitality." In the verses preceding this, we read, "Offer your bodies as living sacrifices. Think of yourself with sober judgment. Many of us form the one body. We bring different gifts." And again here, as I just read, "Love must be sincere, be devoted to one another, never lacking in zeal. Be joyful in hope." And where do we find our hope? Our hope is in the Lord. And we know that even though we're going through times of uncertainty, even though at times service overseas may be difficult, service in your neighbourhood may be difficult, your family may be giving you grief for being a Christian, whatever you're going through, we need to keep our eyes fixed on the fact that our hope is in the Lord. One day we will be with him for eternity. And from that hope, we need to draw our joy so that we can be strong for the here and now and continue to serve him in obedience and in joy. So be joyful, be hopeful, and continue to obey the Lord in your service. Thank you for listening. Bye for now. Here's my tea.
Here's the tea, and bye for now.
Well, thank you, Megan. We appreciate you sharing that with us this morning. The video or the PowerPoint that Megan talked about is on our website, if you'd like to have a look at that, just explaining their journey over the last number of years. But it's been great to hear from our Link missionaries and get a little bit of a taste what life is like for them. To close our service, Tim Clark, who was the associate pastor at St. A's, is going to play us out. He's recently taken up a post as chaplain in the army, so he's off training for that right now. But we're going to let Tim just draw our service to a close now.
who you are, who you are, and I'm loved by you. It's who I am, it's who I am, it's who I am. It's who I am.
Wow, thank you, Tim, for playing for us. That's the end of our service this week. Next week, we're back to normal, back in the church. Hopefully, in the coming weeks, we'll have people in with us. but I'd love just to say a blessing as we depart. May the beauty of God be reflected in your eyes, the love of God be reflected in your hands, the wisdom of God be reflected in your words, and the knowledge of God flow from your heart, that all may see and seeing believe. God bless. Thank you for joining us this week, and we'll see you next week.